Wow, mapping the culinary world has finally landed in Iceland. Man, what a like quirky country. It has got just some of the most beautiful nature that you can find out there. Just Google Iceland nature. You'll find tons of stuff. A good buddy of the pod, Marissa, is with us today. She was like, I gotta be on the Iceland episode. I was like, okay, fine. And all the recipes that she is gonna be looking for, as well as what you guys should be looking for, is gonna be on our newsletter. So please sign up for the email newsletter that is in the middle of our webpage, culinaryconvo.com. Make sure that you check out all of our social media and that you watch us on YouTube, whether it is Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Follow us. That way you can stay up to date on things. And then YouTube, you can see us and watch and comment and like and do all those good things. But definitely make sure that you check us out. And yeah, Iceland, I'm telling you what, they've got so many geological features that impact the food, but also history that has changed throughout the isolation of the island. It's just kind of it's a really cool episode. We do a deep dive on it. And so definitely with the deep dive and the recipes newsletter, we have tons of research tidbits we add on there, but we will move on to the episode of Mapping the Culinary World Iceland after a word from our sponsor. Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody. We are in Mapping the Culinary World with Marissa.
How's it going, again?
Marissa? Again?
Why do you keep bringing me back?
Because I hate my fans. No, I love my audience. They're great. I bring Marissa on because she's wonderful, too. And she is. She told me from the beginning of doing this podcast, she said, oh, you have a mapping segment. And I started talking about it. And she said, when you get to Iceland, I need
I
to start
to
doing
be there.
Yeah, and it's been over a year now, and Iceland, we have finally landed on Iceland.
It took so long.
It took so
I was patient throughout all of it, and now we're here.
Patiently and waited for Iceland.
Literally, the only reason I wanted to do Iceland was to make fun of your pronunciations of the names. Because obviously I'm 100%, 1,000,000% fluent in Icelandish.
Right.
Ism.
Yeah. Icelandism.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you are right. I was literally looking through the foods and going through it, and I'm like, this is going to be rough. This is going to be pretty hard. But yeah, I mean, jumping right into it, this episode, it is in depth. It is going to be, so I don't know how long it's going to be. We're just starting, but this is like deep dive Iceland. We've got all sorts of stuff here. So kicking it off, Iceland, it is an island. It is just on its own. It's next to Greenland. Greenland looks like a massive ice sheet, and Iceland's like this dot.
Isn't it the funny thing that, like, they should have swapped names?
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Like, it was like a trick that everybody, they played on everybody, all cartographers around the world.
Then Iceland also has volcanoes, like, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. They say the land of fire and ice, but it's like, it's more fire. Like, they get snow and ice, but it's not, like, constant, like Greenland, and it's... Yeah, strange. But it is a Nordic island country in the North Atlantic Ocean and the most sparsely populated country in Europe. So the most sparsely populated. Iceland is the biggest part of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge that rises above sea level, and its central volcanic plateau is erupting almost constantly. The interior consists of a plateau characterized by sand and lava fields, mountains and glaciers, and many glacial rivers flow to the sea through the lowlands. Iceland is warmed by the Gulf Stream and has a temperate climate. Despite a high latitude just outside the Arctic Circle, its high latitude and marine influence keep summers chilly, and most of its islands have a polar climate. So it's like, if you're on the big island, you're fine, but if you're on the other islands, you're going to get ice and polar climate. Wonderful. According to the ancient manuscript Landnámabók, the settlement of Iceland began in 874 AD when the Norwegian chieftain Ingólfur Arnarson became the first permanent settler on the island. In the following centuries, Norwegians and to a lesser extent other Scandinavians immigrated to Iceland, bringing with them thralls, i.e. slaves or serfs, of Gaelic origin. So, yeah, Iceland was settled by a bunch of Nordic people with slaves. Oh, boy.
Makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah, sadly. But yeah. But the currency in Iceland, it is the Icelandic krona. Yeah. Look at those notes. It's got a weird dude with a flat head, a lady with a three-tiered cake hat, and some guy with a bowler cap.
Like this guy.
Yeah, yeah, mister, I'm going to hold my arm. Yeah, I don't know who any of those people are. I'm sure some of them are very important. I didn't look it up. I was like, I don't care about their money. Once again, very colorful, better than the U.S. money.
Yeah.
Yeah, but their population, look at the Icelandic people. Oh, my gosh, they're all
look
so
at all
nice.
Of them stuck in the photos that I searched up on Google Images.
Yeah. Look at them. It's 376,248. So yeah, that like, it's crazy to me because Vanuatu was the same thing. It was like 300,000 people, but I think way more people know about Iceland than Vanuatu. So that's, it's like, true. Iceland has hardly anybody. No wonder they're like, oh yeah, it's the most sparsely populated. They're 179th in population. So if you meet somebody from Iceland, like a Bjork or what have you, yeah, it's like, oh, rare person.
I know you.
Yeah.
But I also don't.
I've heard of your people. Yeah.
You're like an anime main character protagonist. You're really cool.
You're super cool. We hope that you stay here and teach
you're
us
like
your ways.
Shrouded in mystery.
You're shrouded in mystery.
I'm from America. Can you tell?
Yeah. We're always going to have a cutscene where you arrive. Yeah, oh man. But their land area, it is 102,775 square kilometers, which is about 39,682 square miles. So that's 106th in land area. But in terms of like islands, I know I talked about like island size for, I believe it was New Zealand. They're the sixth largest island. I do not know how they compare. I tried looking it up. And I don't know how they compare. It is a pure island. Like, it is not really surrounded by much. So, but their official language is Icelandic. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know. Yeah. So, but no, this little chart here, if you're a YouTuber watching on our show, these are phrases that they can say in one word, but it means this entire phrase, okay? So, Íslenska is Inska. I don't know what Inska is, but that's what they say. If you say, ha, like that, it is, excuse me, I didn't quite catch what you were saying. Will you please repeat? What? And then,
I don't think you should go lower. Just end at ha, and then be like, audience, you can read the rest of it, because I don't want to ruin everything else.
Well, the one that I liked was the last one. I think, I don't know if that's a P or a B, it's like, Petardast, and it's, we appreciate the extreme seriousness of the situation, but we certainly hope for the best. And I, like I said, somebody from Iceland is probably going to listen to this and be like, these are fake, it's a meme, these are jokes. And I'm like, no, seriously, guys, they use this one word, and it means everything.
Ha!
Ha! But it didn't act like it was a joke on whatever page I was on. And so, yeah, you can look at these here. And again, I talked about the YouTube. Like, subscribe, smash that like button, do all that stuff, follow us, rate us, do all those good things, share these videos or the clips that we have on all of our social media. You got Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, you got it all.
Yeah, we're actually opening a Yelp.
Yeah.
Account.
It's a Yelp account. Yeah. But no, rate us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. You can definitely like us. Go to our merch store where you can get cool t-shirts like this one. Hold on. Gonna show it. It's a biscuit and gravy. Oh, crap. I got my mic in the way. Here we go.
The microphone does not come with the t-shirt.
Look at that. The biscuit is sleeping, and he's having nightmares of him being wrapped up in the gravy.
It's honestly a really messed up little design.
It kind of is, in a way.
Oh, God. Don't worry about that. That was just my impromptu camera light falling over.
Yeah. Easy done.
Very sorry.
Easy done. Yeah.
You should probably mute me.
Oh, you're fine. You're good. You're fine. So here it is. But yeah, check out our Threadless merch shop where you can get t-shirts, stickers, magnets, all sorts of things. Anyways, all designed by Marissa here. But right here, the official language of Icelandic. Now we move on to the capital city, Reykjavik.
Reykjavik. Yes.
There we go. Yeah. It's also the largest city.
Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty City. That's what it is. Yeah. But
Wubba-lub-dub-dub.
Yeah. Wubba-lub-dub-dub. But yeah, Reykjavik is also like kind of a big deal. A lot of people travel through that city. That is like the place they go. Very interesting, has a very nice culture. I think I read on here that it was like 60% of the Icelandic population lives in this city. So it's just like pretty much everybody else is sparsely moved out. And then it's like, yeah, we got one city that has over half the people of this country. Like, man, oh, man. So, yeah. Pretty cool little island. Yeah, exactly. Any type of voting, they win.
That would be so funny to imagine in, like, American voting.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah. If New York City had, like, 60% of the population, that would be crazy. Especially with 50 states. Anyway. But the next thing here, taking a look, we've got Hannah Kent. She is an author of different books, one of which being like burial rites, I think is one. It's always, you know, the good people. It's what have you. She's Icelandic, I believe. Or she lives in Iceland now. She's an author. But her quote, this is the interesting quote segment. This is from jonesaroundtheworld.com. Iceland, you can see the contours of the mountains wherever you go, and the swell of the hills, and always beyond that, the horizon. And there's this strange thing. You're never sort of hidden. You always feel exposed in that landscape, but it makes it very beautiful as well. Yeah.
Kind of scary.
Yeah, right?
But
kind
also
of creepy.
Yeah. Poetic. It feels like a Robert Frost description.
It kind of does, doesn't it? And I think Iceland has the same thing as like Easter Island a little bit in terms of there's no like trees that are like massively populated there. There's trees there, but they're not like forests of them, which is kind of crazy. Like you step out on a landscape and then it's just like all grass and things. So yeah. And then the next one here, Jessica Henwick. She's an actress. She's been in some Marvel stuff. She says, I went snorkeling between tectonic plates and Iceland's Silfra fissure in the winter. You have to wear thermal layers and a wetsuit and what's called a teddy bear suit so you don't die of hyperthermia. My lips still went blue. That was an experience that I will carry with me for the rest of my life. So beautiful and so quiet. Yeah.
So, thank you, Jessica.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine being in a, they call it the teddy bear suit, but like a thermal layers and a wetsuit and still feeling like you're freezing. I could not imagine that. That is crazy. That's just, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But yeah, influences here on good old Icelandic cuisine. I keep doing a New Zealand accent. I don't know why. This is a historical picture of things. Much of Iceland's cuisine is based on fish, lamb, and dairy products with little to no use of herbs or spices. Due to the island's climate, fruits and vegetables are not generally a component of traditional dishes, although the use of greenhouses has made them more common in contemporary food. Puramutur, I don't know how you pronounce it, is a selection of traditional cuisine consisting of many dishes and is usually consumed around the month of Pori, which begins on the first Friday after the 19th of January. Yeah. Yeah. Now we move on, after the influences, to your comfort food dishes. The first one here, I gotta admit, any good country, you gotta have a hot dog, and Iceland is no exception. They have an Icelandic hot dog called a pilsner. It is an Icelandic hot dog, or pilsner is a unique combination of a sausage made from Icelandic free-range lamb, a warm steamed bun, and toppings such as fried and raw onions, ketchup, sweet brown mustard, which is what we see here, and remoulade. Yes, a remoulade. This flavorful hot dog was created at Bjarne's Bestu Pilsner, or Town's Best. It is a small hot dog stall which has been preparing them for over 60 years. It is recommended to order one with everything, or for the best experience.
I feel like that's the first time I've been intrigued by a hot dog.
Yeah, yeah. I find it interesting that they do lamb. That's like, wow. Okay. So it's, yeah, it's an interesting little deal.
Since I haven't had lamb, but you have, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Do you think it would work? Because I think you've said that lamb isn't like a great all-around sort of meat.
I don't remember. It isn't. It's very what they call gamey. Right. Mm-hmm. But gaminess in lamb, honestly, it tastes like a wool sweater, which I know people are like, what do you mean it tastes like a wool sweater? Imagine the smell, or like if you got a wool sweater stuck in your mouth, not the texture, not any of that, just the flavor. That is what is kind of distilled. And then it's meat. So like savory meat afterward. And I know that description doesn't sound great. Yeah, in a food, it's really good.
Yeah, and I think in a hot dog, it sounds like it would work.
Totally, especially in the winter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, it'd be good. This next one here, it's kind of a smorgasbord, which they have those as well. But you've got here Thorimatur, which I guess that little P symbol thing, it's a TH. So Thorimatur.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I think that symbol, also in Old English, maybe? That we used it's a TH.
So it's like a Gaelic thing. The Gaelic origin. So. Yeah.
Also, I could be completely wrong, so don't listen to me.
I could be totally making this up, and I would not remember if I did or didn't.
I just remember in Old English, we had a bunch of crazy
right.
symbols.
Yeah, we had like a lot of little symbols that...
But
yeah.
It was all like borrowed from other places.
Right. Yeah. But Thorimatur is a selection of traditional Icelandic foods consumed predominantly during the Nordic month of Thori, taking place from mid-January to mid-February each year. Cured fish and meat products are cut into slices or bite-sized pieces and served alongside rugbrød, which we'll get to that in a minute. And butter on numerous buffet tables. The standard choice includes specialties like fermented shark meat, smoked lamb, seared lamb, blood sausages, and much more, all of which can be additionally soured according to personal preferences. Oh boy. Typical accompaniments include brennivin, Iceland's flavored spirit drink, and seasonal Thori beer that is traditionally produced by local breweries specifically for the occasion. Yeah. Yeah.
That's very interesting. And also, like I was saying, in the New Zealand episode, I
Yeah.
feel like the entirety of Iceland you can't make a judgment on until you like
You
try
go.
it.
Right. You
So
go, you try it. Yeah.
I'm kind of scared by the seared lamb head, but also, oh, and also the fermented shark meat.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe it's good. I don't know.
Maybe it's good. See, I
I
agree with
don't.
you though. I do agree with you because, like, it's one of those things where I think when people think of like fermented, soured, what have you, they know that it's kind of like a pickly type, what have you. So if you're already against pickles, you're like, dude, I'm not gonna like that. There's no way. But like kimchi, I think a lot of people when they first smell kimchi, they are very off put by it. They're like, whoa, what the heck? But then you eat it and it's way different. You then almost like appreciate the smell. You're like, oh, wow, this is actually super good. It's got a spice, it's got a kick, there's like a carbonation to it. Like, this is really good. And you want to put it on pretty much everything, which is why a lot of Koreans do that. They put it with a lot of different things. And so, kind of like what you were saying with the fermented things, it's like, yeah, you're not going to know until you like try it because it depends on the brine, it depends on all that. And the light is down again.
I'm sorry.
You're
I'll
good.
just leave it so it doesn't cause more interruptions.
But no, you're good. So yeah, but the main thing is you got to go. You got to try it. You got to meet the Icelandic people, the rare people.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think it makes sense for somebody like me, of course, because I'm just the textbook definition of a zoomer. I think it makes sense to feel that hesitation. Obvious, I was being sarcastic. Not just me, but a lot of people.
Yeah.
Especially if you live on an island or somewhere so close to the ocean.
Yeah.
And of course, the Pacific Northwest is close to the ocean, but we're also attached to the rest of America.
Yeah.
So you don't really get the experience of, you don't at all, of an island trying to
Right.
create a sort of food culture, I guess. You get to borrow from what's in the mainland, and I think that's what I think recognizing that helps sort of diminish the hesitance
Yeah.
that I experience because it's like, of course, I don't know what it's like because I haven't tried it, or I don't understand the sort of geographical location of the place, and so I can't understand how that also affects the food of it.
Right. I try to like distill it down to like if this is a food that they have been eating for like a long time. Either one, it has benefits, right? Like of some kind, it has benefits. Or two, they've made it taste really good, right? Like it's got to be one of those two things. If you're still eating it, you're still consuming it, you're still cultivating it. Like you were saying, you're on this island, you don't really have much else. Like you don't have much outside contact, trade for a long period of time. It's got to be good. They've been surviving on it. Like, why not? But yeah. And then the next one here, Icelandic rye bread or rúgbrauð, I believe, characterized by its dark brown color. Rúgbrauð is a rich and dense Icelandic bread that was initially prepared solely with rye flour. It is traditionally steamed in underground pits that were located near numerous Icelandic geysers, and which provided heat for steaming. Nowadays, the somewhat heavy rye flour is usually combined with other flour types, buttermilk and molasses, to produce a lighter version of this classic. Often combined with various spreads and toppings, this subtly sweet bread is also blended with milk or buttermilk and enjoyed as a porridge or a nutritious dessert.
I already love rye bread. I mean, I don't love it, but I like it. And so this sounds really good. And it also makes me wonder, because of it mentioning the geysers, I think that's super interesting because of how diverse Iceland sort of just everything is with the land, since you get like so many in one, with like so many different just locations. I
Yeah.
wonder how smaller towns outside of like the bigger ones, like Reykjavik or others that I don't know
Yeah.
because anyway, it's really interesting to wonder what smaller sort of like communities have done with the land around them to make food.
Yeah. It seems like anytime I see anything about Iceland, this is thrown on there. They're like, look at what we do. And they stick it in the ground. And it, like, yeah. They come back out and they're like, oh, look at this dense bread. And then they try it. And everybody's like, oh, that's pretty good. And it's like, yeah, it's rye bread, but it's slightly sweet because of the molasses and things. And so it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, make that bread. Like, that's how it should be done. Like, it's one of those things where if you've got this natural resource that can do it and you don't have to burn anything, that's pretty easy, man.
Yeah,
Like,
it's just kind of fascinating to imagine in general, because
yeah.
it's we're so used to the industrial way of cooking, like
Yeah.
tradition or not traditional. I mean, like modernized cooking with an oven or a stove or whatever, and
Yeah.
not thinking about, oh, how can I use the land around to cook
Right.
something or
Yeah.
just make it.
Yeah. Put it in a pit. Somebody was making dough and they're like, oh, I ran out of firewood. And they're like, put it in a pit. And it was like, what? Put it in a pit. And it was like, oh, okay. So they do it and they're like, oh, this is actually pretty good rye bread. And then it's like, because you put it in a pit. That's why. It was like, okay, pit guy. Like, jeez. But yeah, good old Rugeral, I believe. It could be like, I bet you anything I'm pronouncing that so bad. I bet it's like got a hard sound or something, and I have no idea. But this next one here, Hangikjöt. Hangikjöt is a. Yeah, it is a smoked lamb specialty hailing from Iceland, where it has long been an integral part of local food culture. A cut of leg or shoulder is dry salted or brined, then dried and cold smoked over a fire for a couple of weeks. Weeks. traditionally, the fire for the smoking process uses dried sheep dung for fuel, which is said to be the secret behind the meat's distinctive flavor and aroma. The meat is usually smoked according to individual preferences, and these days it may or may not be smoked with sheep dung. The period of drying is also typically shorter than it was in the past. In Iceland, Hangigjot has been traditionally enjoyed during Christmas, either hot or chilled, and it is usually accompanied by a side of potatoes, green peas, white sauce, and pickled red cabbage. Hangigjot is also a typical food item included in the Icelandic Þorramatur. A traditional buffet which is served during the period of midwinter festivals or Þorrablót in the country. Apart from being consumed on festive occasions, this meat specialty is also often eaten on Sundays and is especially delicious when thinly sliced atop slices of Icelandic rye bread or skonser, which is thick pancakes. Yeah.
It sounds interesting.
It does. I find it crazy that it's like cured, like it's smoked for weeks. That
Yeah,
is a
but
smoky,
then
smoky meat.
it looks that pink.
Yeah. Like, I wonder how large the smoke ring is. You can see it on beef pretty easily because it's like red, right? But if it's lamb, I don't know. I don't know where I'm gonna see that. I don't know.
I think it. I don't think I could have it chilled. I think I could only
Yeah.
have it hot.
Hot.
But
Yeah.
that's just like an issue of mine. If there's like something savory, I would prefer to have it hot than
Yeah.
cold,
Then
'cause
cold.
then it doesn't make sense in my brain.
Yeah.
But it
Yeah.
does sound like something to try.
Yeah. It's sheep dung smoked lamb. Tasty.
I don't even mind the poop part, I don't think.
Yeah, I was gonna say that we've been using cow crap for fuel
Yeah.
for I don't know how long,
Also,
but
you burn it off, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Did it? Oh, you got a little piece of dung there. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he's like, oh.
Benny and Biscuit do that all the time.
Oh, God, I know. They're disgusting little boys. they don't know what they're doing. But the next one here, you have Hurtisya. Yeah, yeah. Which it looks like Hard Fisker. That's what it looks like, but it's not. It's Hurtisya, which is weird. But anyway, and I say weird in a nice way, not a bad way. I'm not making fun of you Icelandic people. I don't understand your letters. It's hard. One of the staples of traditional Icelandic diet, Hurtisya, is a fish delicacy made by following an old preserving method that involves drying fresh fish on wooden racks outdoors in the cool Icelandic wind. The fish may be soaked in a weak brine before being dried for a slightly saltier flavor of the finished product. Typical fish include haddock, cod, and wolffish. Although fish such as flounder or Arctic char can also be used after drying for several weeks, the fish obtains a tough, papery, and chewy texture and a characteristic yellowish hue. While the flavor is salty with a strong odor, the fish needs to be pounded well before consumption so that it becomes flakier and softer and is then typically enjoyed smeared with cold salted butter as a snack. High in protein, omega-3 fatty acids, and vitamins, this fish delicacy is often enjoyed as a packed lunch or used in stews or soups, and is also an essential part of the Icelandic Þorramatur buffet, which is traditionally consumed during the midwinter festivals in Iceland. Once food for the poor, Hurtisya, is today an expensive food item in Iceland, and it can be found in almost any grocery store.
That sounds interesting. And
yeah.
I'm really curious how it pairs with the soup that they would make.
I know, yeah, like, because it would be like a rehydrated type of thing. So it's like, I don't know if like the skin would bring it a lot of like fishy, salty, briny. I'm not sure. And maybe that's why they do a weak brine and not a strong one, is because they want to incorporate it with something else.
It's also interesting to recognize the pattern that they leave stuff out for a few weeks before doing something with it.
Exactly. Yeah. They're like, hey, are you smoking that meat? Yeah. Let's do it for a couple weeks. Let's see what happens. And then it's like, oh, hey, you making dried fish? Yeah. Let's leave it out for a couple weeks. Let's see what happens. It's like everything is a couple weeks. They're like, oh, hey, you making rye bread? Yeah. Put it in a pit. And then it's like, for a couple weeks. They're like, oh, okay, yeah, yeah. And they're like, oh, we made rye bread crackers. He's like, so you put it in a pit. Put it in a pit. I like to put it in the pit guy. I like him, but although he is very distracting. So I'm gonna keep
the pit.
Put it in the pit. Rye bread pit. Anyways. Yeah, yeah. Icelandic fish and chips. Yeah, they have their own version of fish and chips. This dish is an Icelandic version of the classic English fish and chips. In the UK, the batter is made with flour, vinegar, salt, beer, and baking soda, while the Icelandic version is made from spelt flour and without beer, making the rapeseed oil fried fish lighter and similar to tempura in texture. The fish is typically caught from the Icelandic waters, and it's always as fresh as possible. Icelandic organic chips are not fried, but roasted in the oven and topped with chopped parsley, resulting in a texture that's crispy on the exterior and creamy within. Regarding the accompaniments, skirones dip is a staple of Icelandic fish and chips, made with a combination of skyr, olive oil, and fresh herbs and spices, which would be really good. Skyr is like their yogurt.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That sounds good. So, is it similar to tikka masala? The sauce? That's not the one. Was that the one I wanted? I don't know. There's a lot of
tartar sauce? Is it similar to tartar? No.
No. Because of the yogurt.
Oh, the yogurt. Yeah, no. Tikka masala has yogurt in it. Yeah,
yeah,
sometimes. Yeah, they marinate the chicken or beef.
Is it similar to that?
I would say it's similar only that they're both yogurts. One is a marination. The other, they're using it as the dipping sauce, right?
That makes sense.
So it's like Icelandic tartar sauce, but yogurty.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty good. I like that it's like tempura. That's like, that's a great, like McDonald's tries to make a tempura batter type of thing on their McNuggets. So Iceland was
they
like,
do?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tempura type batter. It is not a, it's not your typical like flour, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken type of batter. Yeah.
Well, it still sucks. So they are doing a good job.
Hey.
What?
Chicken McNugs have a good texture. They have a good texture. That outside texture, pretty dang good.
I am a strong McDonald's hater, even if I eat it.
Even if I eat it and enjoy it, I still hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like my whole thing for like most life things.
Is that you dislike the McDonald's.
And then I do it.
At the Ronald McDonald? What? Huh? You sure? Oh, man. But this next one here, you have Kyotsupa. Kyotsupa.
I love soup.
Yeah. This is a hearty Icelandic soup. It's nourishing combination of lamb, preferably on the bone, cuts and carrots, rutabaga, potatoes, onions, and various fresh or dried herbs. It is traditionally thickened with oatmeal or rice, while other additions may include leeks or cabbage. Kyotsupa is occasionally served with a dollop of sour milk. I bet that's like sour cream. So, yeah. That'd be pretty good. Mm-hmm. That'd be good soup right there. Baby lamb, potato, carrot.
Mm-hmm. I want soup.
Yeah. Soup is pretty great. Yeah.
You should mail me some soup.
Mail soup. So like in a Ziploc bag? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Like Canada's milk.
Yeah. I'm like, this is Canadian milk, actually. They're like, it looks really dark. I'm like, yeah, it's Canadian milk.
It's leave chocolate. It
alone. Yeah. Leave it alone. It's Canadian chocolate milk. And then it gets to your house and you're like, ah, Kyotsupa!
Yeah, soup! And I like rub my hands together.
Yeah, like an evil maniacal. Yeah. Well, that's what I think this next food is. I think you have to be evil maniacal and you're like, kind of like, for Hikurl. Hikurl. Hikurl or Kaster Hikurl is Iceland's national delicacy made from cured shark flesh, namely Greenland shark and other sleeper sharks. The meat is first fermented for up to 3 months, then hung and left to dry for another 4 to 5 months. There are two varieties of this dish, the chewy reddish Glærhákarl and tender white Skyrhákarl. It is often considered to be food for the brave because the high ammonia content often makes people gag. The cured shark meat is typically cut up into cubes and served on toothpicks and an accompanying shot of a local spirit known as Brennivín.
I love that they pair alcohol with it.
Yeah. Yeah, because that lowers the ammonia. Like, what the heck? It's just, yeah. It's like a pure ammonia taste.
Would you be brave enough for that?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I'd totally try this.
I definitely would be too.
Yeah, I'll admit, probably at first, I definitely would try to do the whole, like, I'm just going to taste it. I don't want to smell it. Main reason why the ammonia smell, I will admit, it like, there's a reason why it's kind of like gagging. Like, it's going to hit you pretty hard. But tasting it, usually it's a lot, it's a sour note. It makes the smell a little bit easier to tolerate. Whether I would like it or not, I don't know. I really don't know. Because it doesn't mention, like, if there's seasonings or anything. And so it's like, does shark even taste good? And it's like, well, there's shark fin soup. It's like, yeah, but that's not the fin, man. That's like, and it's a Greenland shark. Like, it's not, you know, a shark, right? Like,
yeah. It's like a national delicacy, though. So
it is. So I think you have to try it. Yeah, it's a national delicacy. I think you have to try it. It's one of those things. You go there, you look at the hanging, you know, shark meat, and then when they hand you the little toothpick, and they're like, try our hat curl. And you go, yeah, okay. Sure,
here's a bottle of alcohol too.
Yeah, yeah. Drink it with the alcohol. You might gag. It's like, oh, great. But it might be better than this next one, which is, it's just Svil, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. It is an unusual and unique dish from Iceland, consisting of singed, halved, and cooked sheep's head. The head is then cooked in an open fire in order to remove the fur and consumed. The dish is traditionally served with a side of mashed turnips, rhubarb jelly, and mashed potatoes, especially during the traditional Icelandic midwinter festival of Thorablot. Yeah, Thorablot comes up a lot. But anyways.
They have it every day.
Yeah, I was going to say, Thorablot sounds like everybody going crazy for Thorablot. Originally the dish was invented at a time when people could not let any part of the meat go to waste. Although Svid, I don't know what it is, has a reputation of being really tasty, some may find it strange to literally look their food in the eye. Yeah, sometimes. Most animals, whether it's beef, chicken, whatever it may be, a lot of the more tender meat and what have you, it's in the head. Same with hog, same with a lot of tender meat up there. You don't want to let that go to waste.
No.
Looking at it in the eye or looking at its teeth, I think that's where I'm kind of like, oh, I'm good, you know?
Yeah. I think the teeth are hurting me the most here.
The teeth are what get you, you know? Yeah. The eye, it looks closed, so it's like, oh, this one, he was asleep. It's fine. But the teeth, you're like, oh, he was eating something. He was. But no, maybe the next one here. Yeah, Skyr. Yeah, this is the Icelandic cultured dairy product made from cheese, characterized by its thick and creamy texture, although it is so thick that it can almost be sliced. Whoa! It contains 0% milk fat. It is said that Skyr dates back to the 9th century, when Norwegian settlers first arrived in Iceland. Today, it is sold in stores and comes in a variety of flavors, such as blueberry or vanilla. Skyr is incredibly versatile and can be consumed on its own, made into a smoothie with added fresh fruit and ice, or act as a replacement for sour cream. Traditionally, it is served cold and topped with sugar or honey. This one is covered in honey. Skyr may also be used in a traditional Icelandic dish called hrenkjur, consisting of porridge and skyr in equal amounts. It's important to note that skyr belongs to a category that's somewhere between cheese and yogurt. Yeah. From my understanding, it is like, so there's Greek yogurt, there's like American yogurt, and then there's like skyr. And skyr is supposed to be like the thickest yogurt out there. It's like above Greek yogurt in terms of like protein structures and all that kind of stuff. Especially if you can slice it.
Yeah, I want to know how they make a smoothie out of that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is I've heard that it's delicious. I heard it's really, really good. But yeah, I want to try like smoothie. They're like, oh, you can make like swap it with sour cream. It's like, taco. Put on a taco, put it on chili. Like, what up, Skyr? Come on over here.
Could it, like, melt into stuff, too? So, like, melting it into chili?
I would think it could, right? It's a creamy substance. You keep it cold, but then it just... Yeah. And the interesting part, putting honey on it or those kinds of things, you know? It's like ice cream, almost. Like, it's kind of crazy.
It's kind of everything.
Yeah. It's like, this is our dairy product.
We only need one.
We only need one. Yeah. You guys have cheese? That's Skyr. You guys have yogurt? Skyr. Sour cream? Skyr. Do you guys have, like, really thick cream? Skyr. Like, everything is Skyr. Yeah. I think it would be pretty good. My take on it. My hot take. In Iceland.
I think it would be good, too.
Yeah, I think it would be good. But anyways, the next one here, I'm not going to try to pronounce it. It's like Letrocht Hvalkjøtt. It is smoked whale or smoked whale meat. It is a traditional Norwegian lightly smoked whale meat. The whale meat is placed in a secret spice mixture, and then it's lightly smoked. It can be served as an appetizer, usually thinly sliced, as carpaccio. Fresh whale steaks are usually fried and seared with a raw middle point. The flavor is usually described as fatty, oily, salty, sweet, game-like, beef-like, and reminiscent of cod liver oil. The meat is rich in iron, vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin B. Apart from Aboriginal whaling, Norway and Iceland are the only two countries that continue to practice commercial whaling, despite regular outcries coming from animal rights groups and regular people who object to the cruel practice of killing whales. In Norway, minke whale is the most common species that's hunted. The species is free-range and not endangered. However, in 2000, the conservation organization WWF warned that Norwegian whale meat is toxic and contains hormone-disrupting chemicals and metals such as organic mercury that is bioaccumulative. None of the chemicals have exceeded WHO limits at the time of the warning. So, yeah.
That's a lot going on.
Yeah. The next one here, Kajst Skata. Yes, Kajst Skata. Known for its rather pungent smell, it is an Icelandic winter specialty consisting of fermented skate. Skate fish is typically buried in sand and left to ferment for 6 months.
Yay. More waiting.
More waiting. Yeah, a process which gives the fish its recognizable smell of ammonia. The fish is occasionally salted, which significantly diminishes its strong smell. In Iceland, the fish specialty has long been an indispensable part of the holiday table for Parlaksmessa, or Mass of St. Thorlak, celebrated on December 23rd. Although its popularity has been on the decline in recent years, Kajst Skata is mostly consumed in the West Fjords area, and it is typically accompanied by boiled potatoes and turnips, lamb fat, and buttered slices of rye bread, also as well as some Brennevin schnapps, or the traditional Icelandic beverage, and cold beer on the side. As for the flavor of the dish, opinions are divided between those who truly appreciate its flavor and regard the dish as a delicacy, and those who are entirely repelled by its smell. So much so that they won't even try it. Yeah. Boy, oh boy. All I can say about good old Kajst Skata, fermented fish, good smelling, okay fish sometimes turns people off, let alone fermented fish.
I mean, I love the smell of a harbor. But I don't know if I could do fermented fish.
What about fermented harbor?
No.
I think I'm good. No, I don't need it. I think I'll be fine. No.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The next one here, Lumpfish Roe. I love roe. It's really good. But lumpfish roe is one of the more available roe varieties, and it is usually reasonably priced. It is harvested from lumpfish or Cycloepteris lumpus, which is mostly found in the cold waters of the North Atlantic. The natural color of the roe can vary, though it's usually pale gray or dusty pink. However, most producers opt for artificial coloring to attain appealing red or black hues. The beads are small, mildly flavored, briny, and subtly sweet. Lumpfish roe is an excellent addition to appetizers, salads, soups, or seafood-based main dishes. The major producers of lumpfish caviar are Denmark, Germany, Iceland, and Sweden, while the main importing countries are France, Germany, and the United States of America.
I think the artificial coloring is unnecessary.
It kind of is, but it's one of those things where I'm sure, like, you have to take it into account of, like, how much of this gets wasted purely because it's not this certain color, right? Like, people don't know enough that the roe can be a different color than what this is. And so you don't want to waste it either, so adding the coloring, especially if it doesn't impart flavor, it's like, okay. You're going to have oddly colored, like, urine or fecal matter afterward. Have fun. Do you think that's what they say as they're doing it? They're like, man, somebody's going to have weird pee or poo after this. And they just keep doing drops.
That made it worse. Thank you.
That made it worse. Oh, man. Well, the next one here, I want to try this really bad. It is, so it, technically it means lit chieftain, but it's Hofdingi, I believe is how you pronounce it. It is an Icelandic cheese made from cow's milk. It has a fat content of 22%, and it's left to age for approximately 4 weeks before consumption. Underneath its white rind, the texture is soft, creamy, and almost runny, while the flavor is best described as smooth and mild. Yeah. Get you some... Lit Chieftain. Some Lit Chieftain cheese. Yeah.
I want to know why... or how waiting came into this. Is it because it was so cold around that it was hard to probably. Do work?
Yeah, probably. Well, that and a lot of like Nordic travelers, Nordic regions of the world, they were already doing those practices with jarring, pickling, you know, all these brining, like that kind of thing. Whenever you were on ships, you have to ferment beer, and beer was the only liquid that was like safe to drink. And so that is what you put on your boats, was lots of barrels of beer. So then they started doing that same practice with the food, thinking, oh, well, if this is keeping us alive and we love it and we're happy and drunk, let's do it to our food. And then it's like kind of keeps going. But yeah, it's one of those things where that and the weather, you know, you stick it in a, you know, pantry for too long, then that village gets raided, they kill everybody, they take all their stuff, and they're like, hey, we found this weird pit in the ground, and then they open it and they're like, what is this stuff? And they're like, oh, well, we're guessing it's been in here for like, yeah, and then the guy's like, oh, somebody put it in the pit, somebody did it, and they go over there and they're like, I bet it's been in this pit for at least 4 months, at least.
I'm gonna put you in the pit if you don't get in the pit.
Yeah, everybody try this cheese. Everybody,
it's in the pit.
It was in the pit. And then they try it. Cheese. And they're like, you know, this cheese ain't half bad. We're going to start putting our cheese in the pit. And then they keep going. You know, that's how it is. Hofdingi. Yep. Or
that's like an exact conversation they had from
that.
The past.
Yeah. That was historically accurate.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I am sure of it. The next one here, good old puffin. That's right. Puffin is considered a local delicacy that is often prepared through broiling. Yeah.
That's all the information.
That's it. Because honestly, I've seen videos of how they catch puffin. They fly and they have these huge nets and they capture the puffin and then sometimes they ferment it. Yep. Again, horrid smell. It's not good. I know Bourdain has tried it. It was on Planet Earth series about human planet, all sorts of stuff. But then there's also fresh puffin. So they catch the puffin and then they cook it just like you would a nice quail or pigeon or other birds like turkey. They just grab this sweet little puffin and they're like, gonna... And then they cook it. Yeah. Puffin. Okay. Wonderful puffin. Gotta like puffin.
I don't know if I want it.
Yeah, we're moving on from the comfort food dishes. Sadly, the whale, the puffin, the all that good stuff.
I think that's a good thing.
A good thing, maybe? Okay.
Maybe.
But the next one here, dessert. You've got Aberstir. Aberstir is a delicious Icelandic pudding made with colostrum, the first milk from a cow or sheep after giving birth. It has a very rich and thick texture, similar to that of creme brulee. Aberstir is consumed as a dessert with sugar, cinnamon, and other sweeteners that are commonly added to enhance its flavor. It can be served cold, lukewarm, or hot, but it usually is warmed a little before being eaten. Aberstir originated as a homemade specialty made by Icelandic farmers during the springtime when their cows and sheep gave birth. Even today it remains a rare delicacy because colostrum is not found in any supermarkets and it is only available for a short time after the farm animals give birth to their offspring.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's like, here's that birthing food, and you're like, oh, what?
Here's what are we your doing? Birthing food pie.
Here's your birthing food pie. We put sweeteners on it. Yeah. It's like creme brulee, but from
harvested it from Bessie the cow.
Bessie the cow.
There's a little Bessie now.
There's a mini Bessie.
A tiny one.
A tiny Bessie.
Little Bess.
Oh, man. But the next one here, nothing crazy. It's just a layered good cake or a Wiener Peterta.
I thought it was like a brick. I don't know.
They're like, this is layered puffin stuffed with sugar. It's like, oh my gosh. No.
Stop.
Stop killing so many things. Yeah. So, Randalin, or Icelandic cake, this layered Icelandic dessert is known as Randalin or Wiener Peterta. Vienna cake. Although the cake is incredibly versatile and its exact form and ingredients are often debated, it traditionally consists of thin shortbread layers that are coated with rhubarb, prune, strawberry, or apricot. The cookie-like layers are usually flavored with vanilla, cardamom, or cinnamon, and the entire cake is sometimes garnished with icing. Wiener Peterta originated in Iceland, but nowadays it enjoys more popularity in Icelandic communities in the United States and Canada. The cake is a Christmas favorite, but can also be served on other special occasions. Yeah. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I want it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks nice. I like layered anything. Usually a lasagna, cake.
So good.
Ice cream cake. Ice cream sandwiches. Sandwiches.
No, never mind. You're losing me. I don't like ice cream cake and sandwiches.
Why do you not like ice cream cake?
You
need to explain this.
I just don't agree with the pairing of cake and ice cream.
My brain hurts.
Good. Brain freeze.
But no, that I've heard some people say they do not like ice cream cake because it is neither ice cream nor is it cake.
I don't know. It hurts my teeth. It's too cold.
Why don't you like this? It hurts my teeth.
Yeah.
Very popular at parties, aren't you, Marissa?
The flavor is fine. It just hurts my teeth.
I'm just imagining, like, a kid's party, and everybody's like, ice cream cake! And you're like, I don't eat ice cream cake. It hurts my teeth.
Yeah, and then I would get, like, the class clown award.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And then I would eat it anyway, because, as I said earlier, I do things I hate.
Yeah, I agree. I would not be the one that's the standout. I will admit that. Like, if somebody was like, hey, we got ice cream cake, and I hated ice cream cake, I'd just be like,
yeah.
Oh, man, tell me it's chocolate. And they're like, it is. It's chocolate Oreo. I'm like, Oh, boy. And then as I'm eating it, I'm just crying because my teeth are shattering over
Listen,
and over.
Man. Some people have sensitive teeth.
Yeah. That's why they make Sensodyne toothpaste.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
Sponsor
gosh.
Us.
Sponsor us, Sensodyne.
My teeth are in pain.
Do you have pain teeth? Please enjoy Sensodyne.
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 Yeah. Is that from Iceland?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm coming out as Iceland. The entire country.
Oh, man. The next one here, you got Brodur. Yeah, Brodur. It is a oven cheese. That's what they call it. Oven cheese, kalvidans, kielost, spanost, rammelkspudding, or Brodur. Brodur. It's a traditional Scandinavian dish, and it is prepared with a combination of cow's milk and bee stings. Or colostrum. It's colostrum. They call it bee stings. Yeah. It is a yellow rich milk produced by an animal right after giving birth to a calf. The mixture is baked in the oven, and the product acts as a coagulant, eventually thickening the milk to create a thick custard-like dish, often compared to baked cheese. Unijuustu is traditionally enjoyed as a dessert that is often sweetened, spiced with cinnamon, and complemented by fresh berries. In Norway, the dish is called kalvadans, kjolost, or spanost. And in Iceland, it's called brudur. Yeah, buddy.
I guess
what do you think about
it.
This oven cheese?
Yeah, and it doesn't seem
It
bad.
Looks like cheesecake. That's what it looks like.
Oh, I don't like cheesecake. Never mind.
Just
kidding, unless it's flavored.
We've got ice cream cake. You're like, I can't. My teeth hurt. Oh, do you have cheesecake then? Nope. I hate cheesecake. Do you have regular cake? Just cake. Somebody brings out just a cake, and you're like, what kind of flavored cake is it? They're like, oh, it's actually made of puffin. You're like,
Nope.
I don't want puffin cake.
I have a virtual bird I take care of. I can't do that.
I have a finch. Please. No. I can't. Yeah, everybody enjoy the Finch app. Helps take care of yourself.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
I love my little toaster.
Yeah, yeah. My finch is called Taco. It's a good one. And you have
Kaylee's
toaster.
Is bagel.
Bagel. Yeah, bagel. So there's bagel, taco, and toaster. Yeah, those are the good finches. Yep. But anyway, the next one here. We're going over Christmas time in Iceland. That's right. This is from visiticeland.com. Not sponsor of the show, but if they want to sponsor the show, please do so. I want to visit Iceland. I know I do. And it says here, most Icelanders are huge fans of licorice in all of its diverse forms all year round. However, during the holidays, one can expect to see licorice tops, or lacris topper. Yes. It is a meringue cookie with chocolate chips and chocolate-covered licorice. Keep in mind, Icelandic licorice has a strong anise flavor that tends to be much saltier than licorice from North America. So yeah, it's black licorice. Yeah, no, it's not cherry licorice. It is a black licorice, and it's salty black licorice.
I mean, actually, I think the salt would help with black licorice.
Yeah, it does. And then the next one here, you got the rice pudding, or mondlu grauter. It is another typical holiday treat. This rice porridge is topped with whipped cream and chopped almonds. Sometimes it's eaten as breakfast, and sometimes as a dessert around the holidays. There's even a game in which a single whole almond is placed in the pot, and once the pudding is doled out, everyone guesses who has the whole almond.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Just blink, and then everybody's just like, almond time.
If you guess, do you get to keep it?
I don't think so. I bet it's just whoever has the almond is like, I got the almond. And they just eat it. Yeah, yeah. Is that what a typical Icelandic person sounds like? Is that
Sure, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yep.
100%, that's pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to really do a good, you know, rendition of Iceland.
Yeah, no, you do a great job every time.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. But the next one here, what?
What?
The next one is a Sarah Bernhardt cookie. Wow. Yeah, and it looks pretty dang good.
Oh, man.
They are a popular favorite, available in cafes year-round, named after the French stage actress who starred in some of the most popular French plays of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. These multi-layered cookies have an almond macaroon base that is topped with chocolate filling and then covered in melted chocolate.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. See, somebody needs to make a, like, peanut butter cup version of this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, wait. Wasn't there one actually from the place the sandwich place? There was, like, no, it was just a peanut butter cup that was giant.
Yeah, it was a peanut butter cup. Yeah.
But a Sarah,
yeah, so if anybody ever says, hey, have you ever had a Sarah Bernhardt? You can be like, I've heard of it. It's delicious. Get me one now. If you give me an ice cream cake, I will just hand you my teeth. Please, give me a Sarah Bernhardt now. And don't forget a layer cake or a lagkoka, which has layers of gingerbread with vanilla cream, and its sister cake, the rondellina, which has layers of yellow cake with rhubarb jam.
Yummy. Yeah.
Look at this layer cake. It's a good, layer. It's a layer cake. It's really good.
I love layer cakes.
Yeah, layer cakes are pretty great. Now we move on to some of their snacks, and I'm going to drop the hint bomb here. They're all their snacks are bread. It is all bread in some shape or form. They have other snacks, I'm sure, like, you know, commercial grade snacks, whatever, Doritos, what have you. But this one here is flatkaka. Flatkaka, it is a flatbread, meaning flat cake. It is a traditional Icelandic rye bread characterized by its flat appearance and fork prick marks on its surface. The flatbread is unleavened and baked in a pan, then served cut into quarters or halves. In the past, it was baked on hot stones, but today, people even make them at home on electric hot plates. The bread is usually topped with butter, smoked salmon, smoked lamb, or pickled herring. Due to the fact that flatkaka is light, yet packed with energy, it is a quintessential hiking snack in Iceland.
Yeah. I go crazy for any baked bread, so yeah, this is going in my mouth.
Yeah, yeah. And then this one is a laufabrød, or leaf bread. Translated as leaf bread, this classic flatbread is a Christmas staple in Iceland that was first mentioned in writing in 1736. It is prepared with a basic dough that incorporates flour, butter, sugar, milk, and is typically enriched with caraway. The dough is rolled into a thin round sheet, which is then decorated with leaf-like geometric patterns before it's shortly fried. In the past, the decorations were incised by hand using a small pocket knife, but nowadays it's mostly done with the help of small brass iron. Laufabrød is usually enjoyed alongside potatoes, peas, cabbage, and hengikot, Icelandic smoked lamb. Although it is believed to have originated in the north, the bread is prepared and enjoyed throughout the country. Yes. Throughout the whole country.
Bread, yes. Good. Sound
leaf
yummy.
Leaf bread. Yeah. And then we moved on to some of their snacky dessert breads. Visit Iceland.com, everybody. Yeah! We've got here a firm donut twist that is twisted into a bow shape and then deep fried. That's kleina. These are kleina. And then if you wanted to say multiple kleina, it is kleinur. So kleinur and kleina. They're mostly served plain, but in some cases you can find them dipped in chocolate, which makes them even better. Kleiner don't need a special occasion. They're just good always.
Yeah, they sound good always.
They do. It's just donut you can dip. I like it. Then with a certain extra come Asterponger, or love balls. <That's called. laughs> formed from a similar dough like Kleiner, they are filled with an extra portion of love in the form of raisins. They get deep fried as well and are therefore equally addictive.
Yummy.
Your raisins. Woo! Anyway, beauty comes in every form and size, and so do our kanasonder, or cinnamon rolls. Yeah, you can find soft yeast dough buns heavily decorated with sugar, chocolate, or caramel cream, as well as the smaller and crunchier shortbread version, also called old-fashioned cinnamon rolls. No matter which version you pick, they will take your heart by storm. But then there is wienerbrød. Yes, wienerbrød. It has nothing in common with bread, but it is a puff pastry with a layer of vanilla pudding and or chocolate or pink creme. It often comes in flat long pieces and is therefore a popular treat to share with coworkers. And a little tip for those who understandably don't plan to share, wienerbrød can often be found in a little round Danish form, just enough for one. Yeah. And of course, obviously, we have wienerterta. That's right. Wienerterta. It is a layered cake. We talked about this earlier. It has many different names, as its layers. The most common versions are vanilla, buttercream, and a yellow dough with rhubarb. Then you have marriage bliss. And I'm saying marriage bliss because I don't know how to pronounce that name. It is so long. It's like Honabandsela. I have no idea. Don't worry. One doesn't have to be married to get to enjoy marriage bliss cake, and its consumption is not restricted to weddings either. The Linzer cake look-alike is often prepared with oatmeal in the dough and rhubarb marmalade as a filling. A perfect cake for everyone who doesn't like it too sweet. And then there is Jolokaka, or Christmas cake. Yeah, look at this guy. It looks like love balls, except made into a loaf. Basically. Originally baked only for Christmas. Oh, no. with additional ingredients, the Jolokaka is now our everyday go-to cake. The simple-looking pound cake filled with raisins captivates with its intense aroma of cardamom and lemon. So cardamom, lemon, and raisin. Yeah. Then there is Sonvarpaskaka, which is TV cake. When in 1966, Icelandic TV started to broadcast, a new era began, and a new snack recipes were born. Until today, the Sonvarpskaka is an all-Icelandic favorite. It is an easy treat for everyone to bake at home, but can also be found in the bakeries. It consists of a simple sponge dough topped with a layer of caramelized coconut flakes. Neither is it messy, nor are you going to crumble too much. The perfect on-the-couch and on-the-go cake. Yeah, kind of looks like coffee cake, to be honest. Yeah. But coffee cake is really crumbly, so I don't...
I love coffee cake.
Yeah, coffee cake's really good. Oh, we got a dog in the house. We got Ari.
Intruder.
Intruders. The next one here, we're going to the drinks. That's right. Brennevin. Brennevin is distilled from potato mash, and it's traditionally flavored with various herbs and spices, including caraway seeds, cumin, and angelica. Although the name Brennevin translates to burning wine, this strong spirit was nicknamed Svarti Daudi, meaning Black Death, presumably because the bottle once had a label depicting a black skull. While some claim the nickname originated due to its distinctive sharp taste of the drink, this Icelandic staple is best enjoyed, well-chilled, served in a shot glass, and paired with Hikari-cured shark flesh.
I don't think I want it named after a plague.
Why?
I don't know.
So we have Corona beer, and then now we have Brennevin.
Okay, you're right. Never mind.
Yeah, it's all there. And then other drinks that they've got, coffee and Coca-Cola. That's what they drink a lot of, not this exact thing. I just liked the picture because it was coffee and Coke.
Oh, those are really good.
They are really good, yeah.
They're like surprising. You would think they are awful, but they're good.
They're really good, yeah. Coffee is a popular beverage in Iceland, with the country being third placed per capita consumption worldwide in 2016, and is drunk at breakfast, after meals, and with a light snack in mid-afternoon. Coca-Cola is also widely consumed, to the extent that the country is said to have one of the highest per capita consumption rates in the world of Coca-Cola. So this should be right up their alley, coffee, Coke.
Like, oh, I bet they love it.
Yeah. The next one here, we got our trip to Iceland. How much is it going to cost? Right now, best flight for December 1st to the 11th, we've got $624, and it's a 7-hour, 45-minute flight. That's not bad, folks.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty dang good. Yeah. Pretty cheap, too. Like, cheap. Good round trip, $643. But $624 is the best, the cheapest, and the quickest. Iceland travel is easy and cheap. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You go from PDX to it looks like KEF. I don't know what that is. Probably in Canada somewhere.
Yes,
yeah, and then Reykjavik. So yeah. Which is R-E-K. Pretty easy there. Then going over the budget. So how much to budget for your trip? I pulled it from budgetyourtrip.com. How much money will you need for your trip to Iceland? You should plan to spend around 21,957 krona. not U.S. dollars. U.S. dollars is about $154 per day on your vacation in Iceland, which is the average daily price based on the expenses of other visitors. Past travelers have spent, on average, 3,783 krona, or $27, on meals for one day, and 3,399 krona, or $24, on local transportation. Also, the average hotel price in Iceland for a couple is $148. So a trip to Iceland for two people for 1 week costs on average about $2,159. It says here average daily cost, $154. 1 week is $1,080 per person. 2 weeks is $2,159 per person. 1 week for a couple, right? $4,620. Oh, no. Seven. I had to suck in air there. 1 month for a couple, $9,255. You know, staying around. Yeah. Before I get to the last note of interest, one, everybody go to visiticeland.com. They have a lot of great recipes and things about their culture. Talks about the national parks that are there, how to get there, how to travel, some of the people that are there. It is all really good. But then also, Gastro Obscura here, looking at the Food Adventurer's Guide, they had some stuff about Iceland here. Some of it we've already covered, but they also have the Volcanic Springs Banana Plantation in Iceland. That's right. Less than 200 miles from the Arctic Circle, the plantation at the Icelandic National Gardening School is a tropical oasis surrounded by volcanic hot springs. The plantation's easy access to geothermal energy and an unusual warm climate allow them to grow warm weather crops like bananas, as well as avocados, cocoa, and coffee. Many islanders will tell you it's the largest banana plantation in all of Europe, and it might be, depending on who's measuring. The Icelandic banana growing experiment began in the 1940s when import taxes on produce were high and geothermal energy was cheap. For nearly a decade, taxes on produce were high, and so Icelanders ate local bananas grown in geothermal heated greenhouses that held at a steady 70 degrees Fahrenheit. But in 1960, the government removed the import duties on fruit, and Iceland's greenhouse bananas can no longer compete against the international market. Today, most bananas sold in Iceland are shipped to the country from tropical climates, but Ríkir still manages several hundred trees that produce 1,000 to 4,400 pounds of bananas annually. Whether the plantation can be called the largest in Europe is up for debate. Technically, Spain and France control larger plantations. The Cavendish's predecessor, the Big Mike, was lost in the 1950s. Quarantined in the far north, the Icelandic bananas might end up being the last bananas standing. That's right. Yeah. Kind of crazy that they are, you know, the last bananas standing. I am kind of shocked. Only reason being because there are a lot of, oh no, my phone. But anyways, there are a lot of Icelandic things that I would have thought of. Bananas was not on that list.
Me too.
At all. They talk about the hot spring rye bread, but then also they go over, and I'm just going to edit this out because Kaylee can't be patient. Almost done. She knows that I use my phone. Anyways, beer on horseback competition, or beertolt. Yeah, beertolt. Icelandic horses are famous for their tolt, a smooth lateral gait unique to the northern breed. The steady four-beat stride can pick up velocity while remaining comfortable for riders, letting them remain fairly still in the saddle while their steeds zip around the track. To prove just how steady their horse can be, there is a beer tolt, a game in which the rider holds a full mug of beer while putting his mount through its paces. The objective is to spill as little beer as possible because the rider who loses the least gets to drink the most. The beer tolt is a reliable feature at Icelandic horse shows. Competitors ride at various speeds in forward and lateral directions, holding the mug with a single hand. Sometimes there is music, the sight of a dozen equestrians, each holding a beer with intense concentration as their horses bounce jauntily beneath them. is as impressive as it is ridiculous, and it is an ideal way to show off your steady horse, your quirky personality, and your respect for beer. Yes, so once again, Gastro Obscura giving us the big lowdown on what's going on in their country. But yeah, pretty interesting that you can hold a beer while riding a horse. And it's not in a can. It's in a mug. And you're just... And you're not even doing that. You're just... And you're just steady. They said that the Icelandic horse is native to Iceland. It is one of the stronger horse breeds in all of Europe. And it basically is, like, not fearful of anything. It will run straight across glaciers, go into, you know, water, rivers, fjords, all sorts of stuff. So the Icelandic horse, a lot of people love them. A lot of people like the Icelandic horse. Now, once again, the last note of interest here for good old Iceland, we're going to go to the IcelandMonitor.mbl. So strange and awesome facts of good old Iceland. Nearly all of Iceland's heating and electricity needs are served by hydroelectric power and geothermal water reserves. Yeah. So that, they're like beyond eco-friendly. They are supporting their own island. Pretty legit, if you ask me. Yeah. Then the next one here is, there are no mosquitoes in Iceland. There are, in fact, very few insects that can do much more to bother a person than simply existing. Yeah, yeah. Comedian John Narr, he was elected the mayor of Reykjavik in 2010 and served 4 years. One of his campaign promises was not to fulfill any of his campaign promises. Yes, good old John. And then the Arctic fox is the only mammal native to Iceland. All other mammals were just brought over somehow. But there were tons of foxes. Lots of little Arctic foxes. Iceland's capital, Reykjavik, is the northernmost city of any sovereign state in the world. It doesn't get that cold, though. Average temperatures in Reykjavik in January is just about the same as in New York.
Hmm.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then from Trafalgar.com, one of their facts here about Iceland, 1 in 10 Icelanders will publish a book.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's 300,000 people, and 1 in 10 of them publish a book. As facts about Iceland go, this one's pretty awesome. The tradition of reading in Iceland dates back to the 13th century, and with 1 out of 10 Icelanders publishing a book in their lifetime, it is clear Iceland is a very literary-focused country. Looking to add some Icelandic literature to your list? Be sure to include some novels written by Halldór Kiljan Laxness, one of the country's most noted authors, who was awarded a Nobel Prize in Literature.
It's kind of awesome.
That is kind of awesome. 300,000 some odd people, 1 in 10 are publishing a book, and they read like crazy. Sounds like they are very well educated, or that they really love fantasy books. And if that's the case,
makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. They're just into sci-fi, you know, whatever it may be. But yeah, so Iceland, what do you think?
The food would probably be hard for me, and I knew that going into this,
but now you know.
Now I know, yeah. And I still love the place, still want to go there.
Yeah.
Still on my shopping cart of where to travel, because that's how it works, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's a cool country.
And I will say, I will say this is one of those things where these are all the, like, Iceland foods or traditional foods, what have you. They are a European country, so they've probably got other stuff. I don't know if they have McDonald's. I thought I heard that was, like, the one place McDonald's didn't work or whatever. But they're going to have some like different, you know, economic things that are based out of the UK or some of the Nordic countries as well. So, yeah, it's one of those things you're going to be able to find some normalcy. If not, you're going to buy a lot of rye bread with lunch meat and you're going to be eating sandwiches every day. But Iceland, beautiful country, lots of interesting food, lots of interesting things about it, how they support themselves. Their horses are like, they have world strongmen and then their horses are basically the same in the horse world. It's kind of crazy. But the next country here, I will say everybody probably just knows it for its name, Djibouti. That's right. Djibouti in Africa is our next place on mapping the culinary world. I'm actually ready to hear quite a bit. It's close to Ethiopia. Obviously, I talked to Lulude Mogis about her Ethiopian cookbook. And so I wonder how much of that translates over to Djibouti.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. It will be. Yeah, near the Horn of Africa, what have you. And then Saudi Arabia, kind of in that. It's, you know, like, I think some might say armpit area. But, you know, let's not go there, guys. Let's be adults here. Okay. It's near the straits there. Good old Djibouti. And so, Marissa, I appreciate you coming on. And doing Iceland. We finally did it.
Yeah.
We finally landed on Iceland. We went through it all. This was action-packed, filled to the brim with all the Icelandic delicacies. Yeah. We had dogs barking, lights falling. We had cats meandering. But we made it through. We did it.
Yeah.
We did it. So, yeah. We'll see everybody next time on Mapping the Culinary World. Goodbye. See you in Djibouti. We'll see you there next time.
Maybe.
In Djibouti, we will see you there for Mapping the Culinary World.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.